And our next case is Donald versus Donald. Mr. Reagan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I represent the appellant Alex Donald in this action. May 6th, 2016, the District Court of Lancaster County entered a decree of dissolution of marriage, dissolving the marriage between Alex and Lacey Donald. In that decree, custody of the two children, who are now ages 2 and 4, custody was awarded, legal and physical, to Lacey, subject to Alex's reasonable rights of parenting time. Those rights of parenting time included every other weekend, Friday at 5:15 p.m. to Sunday morning at 8:15 a.m. The reason behind that was so that Lacey could take the kids to church. Additionally, we had alternating holidays, 5 weeks of summertime, 4 weeks, four guaranteed, and one option for a fifth. Alex was also ordered to have the kids every day during the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, not for a couple hours each day, but from 7:15 or 7:45 in the morning until 5:15 in the afternoon, or such time as Lacey would get off work. Alex is disabled, so he was a stay-at-home dad during the course of the marriage. The district court ordered child support in accordance with worksheet 1 of $855 and came up with what they call a downward deviation of $200 for the reason that Alex has the kids every single workday.
Counsel, you're talking really now about child support. Are you really quarreling about child custody other than the correct label to be applied to it?
Well, yeah, yes and no. I know that's a terrible answer. But the district court felt it was in the children's best interest, and the history of this case showed it was in the children's best interest, that the kids be with Alex during the days. So the district
Nobody's court, disputing that, are they?
Well, yes and no, because there's two levels of two different parenting plans. After both children go to school, which would be 2.5 to 3.5 years from today, then Alex's parenting time changes. It goes to what some of the cases like Poole and Hiesacker would call a more typical parenting time schedule. Lancaster County calls it a 10-4, every other weekend, Thursday and Monday. During the summer, Alex would have the kids every day during the work days, as he does now. So our initial assignment of error is that, look, this is joint custody. And I know we could talk about de facto joint custody for purposes of child support. But the district court obviously feels it's in the children's best interest to spend this much time with their father.
For purposes of the child custody prong,
yes.
What difference does it make whether we call it joint custody or whether we call it gobbledygook? It's all this. It's the specifics of the parenting plan control, doesn't it?
Well,
for purposes of child custody.
For purposes of child custody, we have two kids who are very young. They're with their,
right.
With their father every single day. Their father doesn't have joint legal custody. Their father doesn't have joint physical custody, according to the decree. And then, once these kids go to school, these kids are used to being with their dad every single day. 12 out of 14 days a week, every two-week period. Once the kids go to school, it goes from really...
You're quarreling with the plan once the children start school?
Correct.
And what custody or what time does he have once they start to go to school?
Well, that's the when it goes to... it takes away the every day. It goes to a 10-4. Or some of the prior... cases
so your so your proposal would be, is this correct, that if the custody description of custody or the award of custody were recast, then the period of time for the children after they go during their minority after they go to school would be in his greater control?
Well, I guess that's one way to phrase it. Our argument is that the court erred in not awarding custody pursuant to Alex's proposed parenting plan, which was a joint custody.
Physical and legal.
Physical and
how would that have changed at all the back and forth that would occur before going to school?
Going to school, it would be a week on, week off. The kids would be with their dad 1 week, with their mom 1 week. And this is, I'm talking about overnights.
The overnights actually increase when the kids go to school, right? Because it goes to what you've described as a 10-4. There are more overnights once the kids get older.
Correct. There's more overnights, less day-to-day care.
Fewer daytime parenting time because the kids are in school.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So how
they
is...
They would be under any arrangement.
Correct.
How is what the trial judge did an abuse of discretion?
It ignores... Well, first of all, it trivializes Alex's role as a parent. This is a parent who the court feels is fit and proper enough to have the kids every single day, again, 12 days out of a 14-day period, and provide for the daily needs of the children, for the physical and emotional demands of the daily care.
What did the records show about how the parties got along in terms of controlling, making decisions about the children?
Prior to the divorce? I assume the history.
Before the divorce or during the pendency?
I think the evidence was that during the pendency of the action, the parties did not see eye to eye, as most parties don't during the contested divorce proceeding.
So what makes us think that when the trial judge doesn't believe that joint custody is appropriate, what makes us think that we should determine that it would be?
Well, by saying that a joint custody is not appropriate, it's ignoring the fact that Alex has been trusted with the day-to-day decision-making for these children, their daily needs, their daily necessities. That right there says that it's in these children's best interest to spend this inordinate amount of time with a dad in a non-custodial situation.
Well, isn't it better for the children that they spend the time with dad rather than with daycare?
Certainly.
And aren't there situations where the relationship and the animosity between the parents is really what drives the joint custody decision? A decision not to award joint custody because those parents simply couldn't cooperate and communicate in a fashion that is necessary to make a joint custody arrangement work?
Well, that's certainly one of the elements in deciding joint custody. The parents have such maturity that they can do these things.
Can joint custody be awarded if one party is not interested in that outcome?
According to Judge Burns, it can be. I mean, the court takes into account, obviously, the best interest of the children. The court found the best interest of the children require they be with dad on a day-to-day basis for 12 to 14 days.
As opposed to being in daycare, but once they're in school, not to be with dad.
Correct. So then the children lose that day-to-day contact they have with dad, which I think...
Which the court found was in their best interest.
Correct.
Did the court acknowledge any problems with dad's care of the children?
I don't believe so.
There was some evidence of that.
There was evidence presented.
Okay.
But yet the court still said dad gets these kids 12 out of 14 days. I see I'm low on time, but I do want to address, obviously, the child support issue, because this does take into account... There's a downward deviation, but really what we have here is a de facto joint custody arrangement. Again, these kids are with dad 12 out of 14 days. They're not with dad for...
You concede the guidelines speak of overnights.
Generally. It doesn't say shall. It's a guideline. It's a suggestion. The equities in this situation, again, are that these kids are with dad a lion's share of their waking hours, during which dad, and there's evidence of this, has him for breakfast, has him for lunch, has him for activities, has him for snacks, has him for dinner sometime, because historically, sometimes Lacey would not get off work until 6 or 7 o'clock. That's in the record. So we have a situation where not only is Alex providing the majority of expenses regarding lunches, food, activities, that sort of stuff, he's also ordered to pay an inordinate amount of child support on top of that. So, again, the equities
of
the situation are that this should be a de facto joint custody case. We should look at worksheet 3.
Before you run out of time, do you want to talk about the VA?
I would, yes, please. The other issue is the court ordered Alex to pay an equalization of $37,000. Part of that was $41,900 approximately. That was a disability benefit. The case law is pretty clear. Disability benefits should not either in form or substance be treated as marital property subject to division upon the dissolution of marriage.
You may finish your thoughts.
The evidence was, and I believe it was Exhibit 26, was that of this 41,000, the actual number is $41,906.47, 70% of it was for the disability, 30% of it was for unemployability. So even looking at it through the glasses of in lieu of income, 30% is disability. I did some mathematical gymnastics on this. Of that 41,000, 12,571.94 on a best case scenario from Lacey's point of view would be marital property subject to division.
That's the 30% employment disability?
It is the 30% of the...
$41,906.
Correct.
Didn't a portion of the disability payments also include amounts for Lacey and the children?
Well,
didn't the amount of the payments increase because of them?
They did, but then the Exhibit 26 also said this is what it's going to be without them, my recollection. But of that 30%, again, looking at it most favorably to Lacey, if you take one half, her interest would be $5,272. What that would do is decrease that $37,000 award to $21,318.
Because the payment of the $41,000, 70% of it was for really a physical disability.
It was for disability.
It's a makeup on the disability rating. Is
right.
that right?
Yes. Okay. 30%, my understanding, 30%. It's basically, talking about it in lieu of income.
And you're relying on federal law that would... declare that that's not marital property.
Correct. Well, I'm relying on case law, obviously. I mean, obviously, 1408. But they were married basically 26 months of the marriage. That award covered 31 months total. So there's 5 months which are not marital. Add that. So that 83.87% of that award could be considered during. Again, 30% arguably could be a little income, but our position is that the disability benefit should be considered for purposes of division of assets and debts. So obviously, you can consider disability benefits as a judge, in this case, for purposes of child support or that sort of stuff.
But you're just saying federal law treats it as non-marital property?
Yes, separate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bacon. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Please, the court, opposing counsel. My name is Joel Bacon. I represent the appellee, Lacey Donald, in this matter. I'm going to start with the custody issues, and I hopefully can maybe try to clarify how I understand what the issues are in this case. I think we might start with a couple things that I don't think they're contesting. One is the actual the parenting time. I don't think that's assigned as error anywhere in their brief. And at best, there's a fleeting reference to it on one page of their argument, and that's actually a generic reference.
If you believe the parties are accepting the parenting time?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I think that's true. So all that's right. Not an issue in this case.
So is Mr. Reagan saying that the legal significance of the parenting time should be a joint award?
I think if I understand the argument correctly, it's a de facto joint physical custody argument. So this is a joint, the suggestion is that this is a de facto joint physical custody.
And this argument is being made for the purposes of saying, if we have that, I shouldn't be paying an extra $800 in child support.
I think that's the only place where it matters, well, that's, child support.
That's what he's arguing, and if you look at it, he spends as much time with the children as she does. Why is he paying $800 worth of support?
I think that's true that's somewhat true until we get to the point where the kids are in school, which will be happening in the near future.
Well, that'll change a little bit, but as to the, what he's arguing about the award of support, he has equal parenting. He's taking care of him as much as she is, at least at this point.
At this point, and that's how come I think the court engaged in the downward deviation of, okay, of $200.
That's the court's attempt
at trying to make up for that, Your Honor. Okay. Yes. I think once the children are in school, it does take on the look of a traditional 10-4 with the exception of that hour and 45 minutes of after school that you see. But at the end of the day, what that means is Lacey's going to be responsible for the hallmarks of what the court has looked at in the past in treating and addressing these de facto joint custody situations, which is she's going to be getting them up in the morning, she's going to be getting them ready for school, she's going to be getting them breakfast, she's going to be feeding them at night, putting them down to sleep, taking care of issues when they arise at night. And all that's going to be true once we get to what is going to govern for almost all of the time period.
What was the rationale for changing the parenting time when the child started going to school?
I think the idea was that at that point in time, it makes more sense for Lacey just to be taking the kids straight to school.
What about the VA benefit as far as whether or not the compensation for the physical disability actually is a depression disability, isn't it?
I think part of the
PTSD.
Part of the problem, I think, Your Honor, is, you know, I wasn't the trial lawyer, and so I got the record just like you guys did, and trying to figure out what exactly was what, based upon what was submitted, is very difficult. And that burden would have been on them to show something that is not marital. The burden is on the party claiming it's not marital.
Isn't it a matter of federal law?
To the extent, we have an outlier case that we cite. I'll admit it's an outlier case in our brief that talks about if you have a lump sum payment of pure disability, it doesn't count. That is an outlier case. I'm not here to tell you it's anything but an outlier case. So to the extent I think that they established that this is disability, the reality is that it would be non-marital property. To the extent you find that, I do think it's important, and we touch on this in our brief, what the appropriate appellate remedy is if you find error on that issue. And what that looks like, and I think they're misstating what that remedy would look like. It's not, okay, what we're going to do is carve that out and give him half of that and leave the rest of it as is. The appropriate remedy, and this comes from the Kramer case, where this court considered issues, the appropriate remedy is that can be, the fact that he's getting that entire benefit can be a factor in determining what the appropriate split of the rest of the actual marital estate might look like. So the appropriate remedy would be to send it back to the court for that determination. And I also think then, if you're going to send it back, it would also be, hey, let's figure out what this thing actually is.
But if that's non-marital property and factored out, then it's just not considered in the other division of the property.
It can't be included in marital property,
yeah,
but it can be included in the factor of how we're going to split up the balance of the marital property. And so, Kramer dealt with alimony.
So that's an ability to avoid the determination. In other words, you can't have a remedy around the fact that it's a non-marital asset.
It couldn't be a direct offset. It's just right. One of the factors the court can consider in determining how we're going to split up the balance of the estate. And if you look at Kramer, there's several cases that get cited in there that are, it's actually an alimony case, but the cases it's relying upon are marital estate cases.
Did the trial judge award 50% of the benefit to each party, or did the trial judge award the benefit to the husband and gave the wife some offsetting amount?
As I understand, what the court did is threw that into the marital estate, divided that in half, and I think what Kramer...
I beg your pardon, the non-disability percentage.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
I mean, there's a problem here with what exactly was this disability, what part of it was disability and what part of it wasn't disability, which is hard to tell. And as these issues are going to reoccur throughout Nebraska as we run into military disability issues, I mean, this is a horrible alphabet soup of different programs. And sometimes it's disability, and sometimes it's retirement, and sometimes it's something else. And I think it's incumbent upon the parties who are claiming they're non-marital to specify what exactly you're dealing with.
So I guess what I'm really asking, is there a monetary award to your client to offset the amount of this VA disability? Is that your understanding, or is your understanding that she just gets half of it.
I don't think she gets half of it. I think what the judge did is put it into the part of the marital estate and then divided that up as an order of payment.
But it's a marital estate. That's
correct.
The decree identifies that payment as marital property, identifies that it was put by the defendant into an account, and then orders that the remaining balance of that account be divided equally, yes. Whatever's left.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
Counselor, are you saying that this court is required to send it back if we find error, or that's just discretionary to send it back and we could determine the appropriate property division ourselves?
I think if this court finds error on that issue, I think the appropriate remedy is to send it back for so that the trial court in the first instance can weigh all the other factors.
Okay, well, you may feel it's appropriate, but is it discretionary on our part, or is it mandatory?
I'm not sure on that, Your Honor. I'm not sure if it's ever arisen before.
Okay, thank you.
And you're entertaining the other questions, but I'm out of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Bacon, thank you very much. I don't want to embarrass you, but you might go back and look at the replay of your oral arguments. You at one point referred to the court as you guys.
Oh,
and I try to give everybody equal treatment. Try not to do that again.
I live in Nebraska. You guys is a gender-neutral. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, Mr. Reagan. Thank you. The next case of the day is State v. Jesus A. Chacon.